This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
It's time to be taken on a journey on the DJ Mac Travel Show, only on Plains FM.
Welcome to the show. I'm Douglas Mack, and this is the DJ Mack Travel Show on Plains FM 96.9. Let's get started, and I hope you all had a good weekend and are all ready for a great week in beautiful Canterbury. Today's show, we have two guests with us, Frieda Lusa and Alan Guy with me in the studio, and welcome to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Right. Alan. Would you like to just, Alan Guy is with us, he's a friend of mine from the Model Railway Club out at Ferrymead, and would you like to just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll move on to Frieda after that.
Yeah, right. I retired last year because I found that I wasn't getting enough time away from work to travel. I've always been interested in travel, going right back to 1973 when I was living in London on the Big OE. And some friends and I went on the big round the UK car trip. When we got up to John O'Groats, we could see there was another island just across the water there. We thought, well, we've got to go there because, you know, might never get a chance. And that turned out to be very, very fascinating. Skara Brae was probably the most fascinating thing, along with the Italian hut that had been built during the Second World War. And so I never did anything about that, but when Frieda started up her courses again after the earthquakes, I've noticed that one of them was going to the Western Scotland, including Skara Brae and the Orkneys and the Shetlands, and I thought that's just got to be me. So that was my start to the travelling mainstream again.
Right. Oh, cool. And Frieda is with us, and so... Yeah, just a little bit of a background on yourself, Frieda, would be cool.
Yeah, well, fitting in with what Alan said, I'm a historian and I've taught at the university for 25 years or so. I was a senior tutor in history and I was invited to teach continuing education in the evenings. And so for literally 20 years, I've taught evening classes about history. And in 2006, I was invited to take a study tour through to Britain. And that was the first of what is now going to be 11 this year, the first five with the university. And then the earthquakes came along.
Okay.
And it was after the earthquakes that I started my own business, continuing to do the evening lectures and also to take study tours sort of under my own steam. And the first one, as Alan said, was to Scotland.
Right. Cool. And that is why Frieda and Alan are here, is to talk about what they've achieved and what they've been doing and what that's all about. And it's a different way of travel. So you do an education and then you do the travel itself. So we'll go on to some questions. And so Frieda, so it's Frieda Lusa History Limited. So you're like a fully-fledged tour company, aren't you, as such?
Well, I started my own business when the university was obliged after the earthquakes to withdraw from community education and educational travel. And so it's a very small business. I mean, basically it is my evening lectures and taking a study tour, usually once a year during my university holidays.
Right.
And so I've continued doing, I say, what I did for the university on my own bat and my own business.
Right, cool. And so a lot of your background is history, teaching at the university. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Cool. Yeah. And so how long have you been involved in teaching in the community educational side of it? So
yeah. Well, since 1998, that was when I was first offered an opportunity. These were short-term contracts, particularly for continuing education.
Right.
And a lecture theatre would be used in the evening and it would be open to people from the community. And it was a very large program right through the 1990s and 2000s up to the earthquakes.
Right. Okay. And then the earthquakes came along and changed history.
Changed history. That's right. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so when was the first history study tour? Mm. So that was...
That was in 2006. Yeah, the first invitation came about a year earlier, but you need enough time to, advertise and recruit people. Yep. And so through the second half of 2005, that I was doing that with the university. So they did the bookings for people's flights, had an agent in the UK, and my role was academic leader. So to teach about the places that we were going to, yep, in evening lectures, and build up the sort of understanding of where we were going. And then usually for 3 weeks, a small group tour, generally a maximum of about 15 or 16 people. Cool. And so 2006 was to Northumbria, and we started in Edinburgh and made our way down to York, visiting Lindisfarne and places en route.
I've been to York. I used to live in northern Lincolnshire, mm-hmm, in a lovely little place called Scunthorpe. Have you heard of Scunthorpe before?
Steel.
Yes, it was a steel town. And the river, there was the River Hull, and I think the River Ouse went into the Hull, and then the York flowed into the, and it get really foggy, and then they would open the furnaces in town, and the whole place just stunk of burning metal. It was, yeah, and you always had a two-tone car. It didn't matter. It was because the bricks, they bring iron ore brick in across from Germany, and of course it created dust, which ended up on the road, and then it would snow, and then it would just become this slushy mess.
But I was fortunate. I spent 3 years in York, which is absolutely beautiful, and its main industry was chocolate. Yes. So the atmosphere was very, very fragrant. And
yes, I know. We would go to, we'd go travelling up to York to get away from, they called it Sunny Scunny. Yes. But it was cool. It was a work-related place to be. So, yeah, it was good. Okay. So, Frieda, how many tours do you lead each year?
At the moment, just one, because I am still working at the university for 3 days a week in the Academic Skills Centre, and so my annual leave is usually taken June, July, which is the mid-semester break. So I tie the study tour into that. But I am considering, particularly next year, because of the date of Easter, I'm considering a tour to Kent and Canterbury, spending Easter in Canterbury, but it's still in the planning stage at the moment.
And that would still have the same educational side of lectures going on at the university as well?
Absolutely.
Oh, cool. Yes. Oh, good. And so the main key destinations are like the British Isles and Europe?
Yes. Originally it was medieval Britain. Medieval history was the focus of the first few tours, which gives us about 1,000 years, from about 500 through to 1500. But we found that on the second tour, we were in Worcester and we were doing the Welsh borders. And people said, well, we want to go to the Worcester porcelain factories, the Industrial Revolution sort of period, and canals. So we decided at that point that we just call it history. And whatever history is around in the geographical area that we are exploring, we will explore.
Okay. Yes, because that's quite a big range date-wise, isn't it, England's got a lot of history, and Europe's had a lot of history.
But this year in Wessex, we literally were at Stonehenge and exploring, everything there, all through the history, including beautiful Salisbury, which has been in the news, this very week for, negative reasons.
Okay.
So lots of history right up to the present day.
Right.
Including the Fleet Air Museum.
Yes.
Which, of course, took on the Second World War and the First World War history. So that was an added bonus.
Right.
Absolutely. And at Portsmouth, as you say, with the Naval Dockyard, when you do a cruise of the harbour, you're actually looking at the current fleet.
Yes.
So, history is, I would say there's this moment in time and then the rest is history.
The rest is history. Okay. So how do you choose the destination as such? So is it from people coming to you and saying we want to look here, or is it...
Mm-hmm. that was the reason that we chose Spain 2 years ago in 2016.
Right.
Somebody specifically said that it would be, you know, a wonderful place to explore.
Yeah.
And at that point, we'd only done one across the Channel, which had been Normandy and Brittany in 2014, which tied in with the Normandy landings. And so at that point, we had a get-together of people who expressed interest and started to say, well, where would we like to go?
Yeah.
And some people wanted to go to Granada in the south, and others wanted to go to Santiago de Compostela in the north. And it was like, okay, how much of Spain can we actually do?
Yeah.
But we managed in just over 3 weeks to start in Barcelona and actually do anti-clockwise the vast majority of historic Spain, which was much greater geographic area than we'd done at all. But mainly has been the United Kingdom.
Right. Okay. Cool. So what are the key points of significance of your study tours? So what are people getting the most out of it? Maybe Alan is a good person to answer that. What have you got out of it, Alan? Is it add more to the... to the whole experience when you...
As I said at the beginning, you know, going to Skara Brae, you'd get more background into what's actually happened. And so that's going back, I'm not sure how many thousand years, probably five or six perhaps.
Yep.
And, you know, just working forward from there, because we also found a lot of stone circles. There's not just... the stone circles are not just at... at Stonehenge, there's dozens of them all over the countryside.
Mm-hmm.
And then up in Scotland, we had the Crannogs, which were set out in the islands there. And that's, again, it's probably about 3,000 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
So working forward with that, that's been really, really interesting. And, you know, maybe if I'd had my lifetime over again, I might have studied... archaeology instead of just sticking to export documentation.
Fair enough. Okay, so what is back to Frieda? So, what is the particular person that goes on the tour? Do you have a big range of swing of age groups, or is it what's the sort of age group? Or, you know, not to try and put people into boxes or
exactly.
That.
But it's got to be somebody who's got the freedom, both in time and obviously being reasonably financially independent to come.
Yep.
So it tends to be those 50 and over.
Right.
Sometimes it is, it's been a person who's done a one-off trip. On one occasion, there was a librarian who had just retired, had got a payment and wanted a big world trip. This was her really special one.
Yep.
And that was very special. So the vast majority, I would say, are baby boomers. Those who perhaps are spending the kids' inheritance.
Yep. Well, I get it.
Or
yep.
else have organized their finances through their lives so that they can travel and to do that. But as I say, sometimes it is somebody who has a particular interest in one area. Occasionally, it's one trip because it's to that destination and it may be where their family history is and they want to visit where grandparents came from.
Okay. Okay. So, Alan, that actually relates to something that you did as well, wasn't it? Did you add on to the tour with Frieda, or did Frieda put it into the tour that you went and visited a place that had family... relations to it?
A bit of both, actually, because the tour we did last year was to Wessex. But before that, I'd realised that it was going to be 100 years since the Messines Battle during the First World War. June the 6th, I think, is the date.
Right.
And my grandfather had fought at that and been injured. So I'd arranged another private tour with other members of my family, and we ended up with a specific tour to Belgium, to two Messines, with nine family members. But prior to that, to fit in with the tour, we'd had to do the visit to the great-great-grandparents' villages. So we did that first off. We went to Brockenhurst, and And then we went over to Messines, and we were there for a four-day trip, I think it was. We went to the commemoration of the battle, which was attended by the Governor-General and right. other heads of state from around Europe. And then I joined the Wessex tour, and we went down south to the Isle of Wight. And once we crossed back onto the mainland from the Isle of Wight, I suddenly got this, well, Alan, could you show us where Brockenhurst is?
Right.
And fortunately, I recognised that we were travelling under a railway bridge.
Right.
I said to the driver, just turn left at the end of the road, go back over the railway line. It's the second one on the left. And sure enough, that was the site of the Brockenhurst Hospital, and there's now a Commonwealth War Graves site included in the churchyard. So,
oh, cool.
So that's incorporating a bit of both, but that was an added extra, which wasn't on the itinerary, but it became on the itinerary.
That's right. And that's something that we've often done, is if people have said beforehand there's a particular place that's important in family history,
yep.
you know, we'll have tried to weave that into the itinerary. In Ireland, we went to Enniscorthy, which was where one of the members, you know, grandparents had come from.
Okay.
And when we were there, a group of them went off to visit I think it was to have a drink at a pub, and she ended up meeting her cousin, and it was that she'd never met before. So, yeah, those things are important. But even along the way, sometimes, you know, a member of the party will say, well, you know, our family came from a little village just off here, and because it's our bus and our small group tour, we can make those detours. Yes, which is really, really good.
Yeah. Okay. And that probably leads into something else as well. So people can, like, book a tour with you and go on the trip, and they can either start, do something before or after, and you're not sort of set into all leaving Auckland at the same time and all arriving at the same time and then coming back to Auckland and then, well, you have to go and do it another way. It's quite flexible in a way, isn't it? It's sort of... Yeah.
Yes.
Other than it's probably not a good idea to break into the tour to disappear off somewhere else and then come back again. That's probably not what
except perhaps for a day.
Yeah.
No, originally the university had quite a number of tours each year with different lecturers, you know, leading the tours. And you know, back in the early 2000s, they usually went as a group from Christchurch. And
okay.
So we did that for the first two trips, but even then some people wanted to stay on at the end and have, you know, different flight arrangements. But after the second tour, we were 2008, we were going to Devon and Cornwall, and the general consensus was that most people were independent travellers. They were used to travelling the world,
yep.
but they just wanted to share their interest and have the fun of doing it as a small group.
Right.
So what we did was set a time and a hotel. And we said, right, on that date at 7 o'clock, you know, we would all meet for dinner, a welcome dinner.
Yep.
And it worked a treat, absolutely. Some people did group together and make their flight bookings, you know, as a small group.
Yep.
But most people just went to see family, did something different, like Alan's suggestion,
yep.
and then met up. And everyone arrived, so we said, well, this is working.
Working.
And the same thing afterwards. And I still have family in the UK.
Right.
I mean, I married a Kiwi and came to New Zealand in the early 1970s, but my brother's family is still in Britain, and I normally combine a visit to family.
Mm. And the size of the groups, how big is the group normally in the...
A maximum of 16, which is what we had for the south of England of Wessex. This was Alfred's Kingdom of Wessex, which we've been talking about.
Yep.
And we started in Winchester, and this was absolutely full. We actually had to turn some people away because we were using Rabi's coach lines from Edinburgh, and their Mercedes bus is a 16-seater.
So
we were limited in that sense, but I think most of all because the small group is so good. A little bus can go down narrow lanes and we have flexibility, and flexibility for lunch and things like that as well. So the 16 max. Most of the trips have been perhaps 12 to 14, and that suits us really nicely.
Yes, because it's like a group of 30 arriving in a restaurant or a pub or something like that.
It's impossible.
It has
to be all booked ahead. If you do a 40-person Trafalgar tour, you cannot just see a little thatched pub and say, oh, can we have lunch?
Yeah, you know, no, it doesn't. And so, parking as well, just big buses and getting in and out. Yeah,
yeah.
We have a Mercedes van. It's
a nice bus.
Yeah.
Very nice bus.
Very, very comfortable.
Yeah. Mm.
And talking of lunches, I noticed when we were in Bath, there's a big tour coach came up, two-story job.
Yeah.
And all the passengers got off. And as they got off, they were handing the driver a cardboard box. And I realised this was their packed lunch that they'd eaten on the way to get to Bath.
Yep.
So they could see whatever Bath had to offer that for them that day.
Yep.
Rather than all trying to get the 60 people into one hotel to eat for lunch. Otherwise, you wasted maybe 2 hours
having
lunch. Eating. Whereas a group of 16, we can probably still take 2 hours. But we might get the hurry up.
Yeah.
But we see what we can... The advantage of the huge group is, of course, it's cheaper. I mean, that's obviously it's mass travel that way. But with the small group, we've got flexibility. And it also means if we arrive at a little small village or town, we just say, OK, we're going to be back at the bus in 45 minutes, 1 hour. Yep. And everybody just scatters, you know, to two or three little cafes and you know, whatever they choose. And that also gives people a choice of whether they have a pub meal or just go and buy some fruit.
That's right. And it's probably better value for money. It might be more, you know, comparing apples with apples, it might be more expensive looking, but the value for money and what you get out of it is probably much, much better.
Well, we believe so.
I'm certainly very happy with the system.
Yeah.
See, it works for me.
Okay. So in relationship back to people that travel, if someone was, like, the dates that you have available, if they weren't able to travel, are they able to come and do the lectures with you guys and learn everything about it and then book independently? So and they can go off and do what they need to do and do it as they, in the time frame that suits them as such.
Yes. The lectures and the study tours are actually quite separate in the sense that a lot of people... would not be able to do the travelling. It's only a relatively small number of those who attend lectures who actually travel as well.
Right.
So the evening lectures are literally that. They're community education. And I'm starting a course tonight on Whitby, Hilda, James Cook and Whitby Jet. And so we've got three sessions up to Easter. And there will be people there. Amongst them will be a few who are those going on the study tour, but the majority are just attending because they enjoy history.
Okay. And so when you talk about community education, what sort of, where is there a cost? So if I was to turn up tonight, what would the cost for me to be to turn up?
It's usually, I've kept it fairly low and I haven't increased it in 5 years. So that's a little warning that I might do some point. But at the moment, it's basically $10 a session.
Okay.
So if it's a three session, it'll be $30.
$30.
Now, I don't really want people just booking for one. So it is because I have to do all my own administration. Whereas when the university was doing it, they had staff obviously doing all that. I just taught.
Yep.
So I'm my own PA.
Yeah.
So so if it's a four session or five session, it's $40 or $50 for the whole thing. But I provide handouts for each session, and then we just illustrated lecture for an hour and a half with PowerPoint presentation or DVD clips, whatever. Hmm.
Right. Okay, Fred. Well, that's really good. It sounds really interesting and exciting, and very educational because you go to a place and you learn as you go, as such. So, what is the itinerary for 2018?
We're going to Denmark and Norway.
Right.
We're starting in Hamburg, which everyone will say is in Germany. But the reason for that is before the unification of Germany, the southern part of Schleswig-Holstein was Denmark. And there are several historic sites like the Danneberg, which we want to see.
Yep.
And then we've got it's a three-week tour going up through Denmark, Copenhagen, the island of Bornholm, across to Norway, making our way to Bergen, and then by coastal ferry right up to the very north of Norway to Kirkenes. And so over those 3 weeks. And We have a group of about 10 at the moment.
Right.
And so if there's anyone listening who is interested in joining us, they are still welcome, but it would have to be fairly quick to get in touch with me.
And the actual lectures for that tour, when do they actually start?
We've been learning about Scandinavia for the last couple of years.
Right.
And so probably next, during April, May, there will still be some more.
Yep.
But as I say, a lot of our preparation is over the year or two beforehand. Because for 2019, there has been some interest expressed in Sweden.
Okay.
But I would want to have a commitment, you know, for people
yep.
to go back to Scandinavia
right.
For next year. Otherwise, it would probably be in the British Isles.
British Isles. And that's for 2019. Mm-hmm. And so if people aren't unable to do the one then this year, there's obviously one for next year and probably for 2000.
Possibly two.
Two for next year. And then 2020, we're moving on to there too. So
We keep our fingers crossed.
Well, that would lead into something else as well, wouldn't it? Is that even what you may have on offer at the moment mm-hmm. might not suit, but if people would like to get in contact with you about a place that would like to go that mm-hmm. has some form of history to them or just they're just interested in, they should get in contact with you with mm-hmm. that,
certainly.
Shouldn't they? Because then you can put something together
yes.
and there's other people that would possibly be interested in that as well. So, mm-hmm. So... Let's move on. So, Frieda, if we would wanted to get in touch with you, mm-hmm. what is the best way to do that?
Is email, and right. it's literally frieda.lusa@gmail.com. So very easy.
Right.
But I'm the only person in Christchurch with my name. I'm in the phone book. So,
right.
And there's a website, and I'm on Facebook. So
okay.
There's really no excuse for not finding me.
Yes, no, exactly. Yes. And, right, well... Thank you. Thank you, Alan and Frieda, yeah. for coming along and listening to the being part of the show itself and giving us some valuable information and tips on what you guys are up to and you know, how you're enjoying doing what you're doing. And so thank you, and that's it.
Goodbye, and thank you very much.
Thanks for the invitation. It's really been a pleasure to share this with you and the listeners.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And goodbye.